Radio Prague News.
Pakistan has taken up a Czech offer of humanitarian aid for earthquake-stricken areas. The Czech Prime Minister has said he expects good Czech-German relations to continue under Angela Merkel, the incoming German Chancellor. And security has been increased at the country's two nuclear power plants following a bomb threat by an anonymous caller. Pakistan, one of the countries in Central and South Asia hit recently by a devastating earthquake, has taken up a Czech offer of humanitarian aid. A spokesman for the foreign ministry has said a special plane with a 5-member medical team could leave the Czech Republic as early as Tuesday evening. The plane will be loaded with sleeping bags, surgical equipment, medicine, food, and items for disinfection, as well as water purification. Czech Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek has stated he does not expect any change in good Czech-German relations under Angela Merkel, Germany's new incoming chancellor. Speaking to journalists on Monday, Mr. Paroubek described Mrs. Merkel as a very realistic politician. Continuity in Czech-German foreign policy under Germany's new Grand Coalition could be expected, he said, also because the Social Democrats are expected to fill the foreign ministry post. On Monday, security was increased at the Czech Republic's two nuclear power stations, Dukovany and Temelín, after an anonymous caller warned of an explosion at both plants. A spokesman for the Dukovany plant said on Monday that the caller contacted firefighters late Sunday evening, but police searches at both plants failed to find any explosives or any signs of tampering on site. Emergency staff meetings were called at both facilities. The nature of the extra security measures, meanwhile, has not been specified. The Czech Republic and Iraq have signed an agreement on a Czech donation of military firearms as well as uniforms to be used by Iraqis in the protection of significant cultural sites. The agreement signed by the Czech Defense Minister and the Iraqi ambassador to Prague will see some 1,500 submachine guns and 1,500 uniforms no longer in use by the Czech Army to be donated for Iraqi personnel to guard sites that have been subject to heavy looting and damages since the outbreak of war in Iraq. The donated material is expected to reach Iraq in several weeks in a transport delivery organized by NATO. The Iraqi government has classified the donation as humanitarian rather than military. I'm Jan Fellinger. That's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague's English service, and I'm Dita Asiedu. Up next, the man who would like to succeed Lukashenko in Belarus speaks in Prague. A new study asks just how much political pressure the Czech media are under. And we hear from an Iraqi doctor who's being trained in Prague. In Belarus this month, allied opposition activists agreed on a single candidate to challenge the autocratic rule of President Alexander Lukashenko in next year's presidential elections. Alexander Milinkevich, the man picked to take on Europe's last dictator, traveled to Prague this week at the invitation of Czech President Václav Havel, a vocal opponent of the Lukashenko regime. Rob Cameron has more.
Belarusian presidential candidate Alexander Milinkovic addressing the Forum 2000 conference in Prague. The former Czech president Václav Havel, who founded Forum in 1996, was among 70 foreign guests invited to October's Congress in Minsk, where Mr. Milinkovic was chosen as a candidate in opposition to President Lukashenko. Also present was another famous communist-era dissident turned president, Lech Wałęsa of Poland. Mr. Milinkovic told Forum 2000 that regime change in Belarus can only occur following a wide popular protest, similar to Ukraine's Orange Revolution of 2004, or indeed Czechoslovakia's Velvet Revolution of 1989. International pressure, he said, and financial support for a free, independent press can help stir up that critical mass. Brian Bennett is British ambassador to Belarus.
I think it's very good that someone with the profile of Václav Havel is interested in Belarus, is personally interested. The more people are concerned about Belarus, the more people talk about Belarus, then the better it's going to be for the people there.
8 years ago, Belarusian opposition group set up the Charter 97 organisation, modelled on Czechoslovakia's Charter 77 human rights group, co-founded, of course, by Václav Havel. Charter 97 has an office, a website and a press officer. But most civil society and opposition groups keep a lower profile. Ambassador Bennett again.
The other side of the coin is that some of these initiatives are best conducted with a low profile. Because if they attract the attention of the authorities, then they may themselves get into difficulty. We need to be discreet about the assistance that we're making, because in some instances it causes difficulties for people in the country, and it causes the authorities to block the bank accounts that the money is going through.
Alexander Milinkovic represents a broad coalition of 10 political parties and more than 200 non-governmental organisations, bringing together communists and liberals. Mr. Milinkovic admits he has no chance of winning next year's elections. Belarusian opposition groups are pinning their hopes instead on a mass expression of peaceful opposition, which has so transformed the former Soviet bloc in the last 15 years.
Thank you, Rob, for that report.
Vládní koalice našla kompromis, dohodla se na zadání vyšetřovací komise k Unipetrolu i na zákoníku práce.
Czech television's main lunchtime news on Tuesday, leading with a story about a compromise between the parties of the governing coalition. But how independent is Czech TV's reporting? And how free of political pressure are stations around Europe? That's a subject addressed in an extensive new study entitled Television Across Europe by the non-governmental organisation Open Society Institute. On the eve of the report's launch in Brussels on Tuesday, Ian Willoughby discussed its findings with one of its authors, Marius Dragomir.
We found that in the Czech Republic, television and in general media legislation has improved a lot over the past years. However, there is still a high degree of politicization of the media and of broadcasting regulators in the Czech Republic. And at the same time, we found that there are a lot of political and economic pressures on broadcasters here.
When you say political pressures, what do you mean? What form does that take?
Usually the political pressure and political interference with the broadcasters is done via the appointment procedures of the members of the Broadcasting Council here in the Czech Republic or the appointment of the members of the Council of Czech Television, Czech Public Television.
And have you found more direct influence of, say, politicians calling up journalists and complaining, that kind of thing?
Well, those days are actually gone. In most of the Eastern European countries in the early 1990s, there was a lot of overt political pressure on journalists working with television broadcasters in the region. However, in the past years, countries like in Central Europe, countries like the Czech Republic, Hungary, Slovakia, they made a lot of progress. They adopted improved legislation. So the ways that they interfere with the editorial line of journalists working with various broadcasters became more sophisticated and more complex.
I know you looked at about 20 countries in this study, everywhere from Western Europe to states like Albania or the Baltic states. How does the Czech television industry, or how does Czech television compare to TV in other countries in Europe?
When we talk about media legislation, there are still a lot of problems in the Czech Republic. We have again to say that and to stress the fact that the Czech Republic has done a lot of progress and lots of improved legislation has been adopted in this country. But so it cannot compare at this point with countries like Romania, where there is still overt pressures, economic and political pressures on broadcasters and regulators, or countries like Albania, where there is still a huge legal chaos. But at the same time, the Czech Republic hasn't done as much progress as countries, for example, in the Baltic, for countries like the Baltics, like Estonia, which has now a more developed system of regulation, which doesn't leave much room for such interferences.
And Ian Willoughby was speaking there to Marius Dragomir on the results of a new study on media legislation in Europe.
Thank you.
It has been 60 years since the end of the Second World War, but it was not until last Sunday that the northern Czech industrial town of Ústí nad Labem had a memorial dedicated to the 1,000 Jewish residents who perished in the Holocaust. It is one of the most striking memorials in Europe, a massive granite Star of David half immersed into the site of a former Jewish cemetery. It is simple but powerful. Sunday's unveiling ceremony was attended by town residents, ambassadors from various European countries, and Holocaust survivors. Ústí nad Labem mayor Petr Gandalovič.
Tento památník bude nejen připomínat ty mrtvé, ty oběti holokaustu.
This memorial will not only serve as a reminder of those who perished in the Holocaust, but also of the Jewish citizens of Ústí nad Labem who helped to build this town into what it is today. They too deserve credit.
From the
1860s until 1938, the town of Ústí nad Labem, with a population of about 100,000, had a thriving Jewish community who contributed greatly to the town's industrial, economic and cultural development. Thanks to men like Edward Weinmann and Ignaz Pechka, for example, the city played an important role in Europe's coal industry and even had its own coal exchange in the second half of the 19th century. But before long, a tragic fate befell the city's Jewish community. On New Year's Eve in 1938, the Nazis burned down the local synagogue, which was converted into a meat factory. During the war, the great majority of the town's Jewish residents were sent to the Nazi death camps. In the 1950s, the Jewish part of the local cemetery was destroyed, leaving little behind to remind local residents that it ever had a large and active Jewish community. Israeli ambassador to Prague, Arthur Avnon.
This memorial will remind people of what happened, but it's not enough. I think that it is very important to educate, especially the young generation, about the Holocaust. It's the responsibility of every government in Europe, especially in Europe, to educate about the Holocaust, because the human nature, it showed in the past, sometimes explodes into such atrocities, and it's important to educate about it so that it will not happen again.
Only a few members of the town's Jewish community returned home after the Holocaust. Most of today's 40 or so Jewish residents moved to the city from western Ukraine in 1945 and 1946. The unveiling of the Holocaust Memorial was part of an international conference called The Ghost of the Founders, which was held to explore Ústí nad Labem's German and Jewish roots. This is Radio Prague's English service, and it's time now for our weekly mini-feature, Czech Science. A reconstruction of what ancient Egyptian music might have sounded like. And ancient Egypt never ceases to fascinate people the world over. And Czech Egyptology has an international reputation, and its history goes back to the late 19th century, when the Czech lands were part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Last week, a conference in Prague looked at the links between Czech and Austrian Egyptology. Pavla Horáková talked to Hanna Navratilová from Charles University's Institute of Egyptology about the latest research and findings.
I would particularly like to stress the detective work of Dr. Gottfried Hamernik, who devoted quite a lot of his research time and research career to the problems of Egyptian collections, which are spread through European museums and even particular collections which are not yet attendable by the public.
One such collection was put together by a 19th century Austrian diplomat, but after his death, bits of it ended up all over Europe. Dr. Hamernik discovered a few items in Prague's Náprstek Museum.
His detective work has brought us pieces of a unique ancient Egyptian sarcophagus for quite a long time considered to be lost. Now it seems that there is a chance to have this sarcophagus of an important Egyptian living in the times of Amenophis III, so to have this sarcophagus reconstructed.
Czech and Austrian Egyptologists also discussed what's known as 19th century Egyptomania and the influence of ancient European art, architecture and even filmmaking. They also tried to revive the memory of a forgotten figure of Czech Egyptology.
The other highlight is connected with Bohemia a little bit more, and it regards the Czech sculptor and quite interesting man by the name of František Vladimír Foyt, who was traveling widely through Egypt and Africa in 1930s and 1940s. He too was a keen collector interested in ancient Egypt and in African cultures in general. And his collection and his activities in Egypt were not so well known. Now, thanks to the work of a couple of our colleagues from Prague and from Slovenia as well, František Vladimír Foyt is going to be a little bit more known, which I suppose he really deserves.
And that was another edition of Czech Science with Pavla Horáková. In this week's one-on-one, Rob Cameron talks to Iraqi Dr. Ahmed Hamzi.
My guest in this week's one-on-one is Dr. Ahmed Hamza, a 37-year-old pediatrician from the Iraqi city of Basra. He recently left his troubled homeland and his wife and two children for 3 months training at Prague's Motol Hospital in a program financed by the Czech government. Dr. Ahmed is learning about the use of ultrasound technology in diagnosing heart defects in children, his chosen speciality. I went to Motol to meet him.
I'm Dr. Ahmed Kasim Hamza. I'm from Iraq, from Basra city. I lived there the whole of my life, there in Basra.
When you look back at life in Iraq under Saddam Hussein, what are your strongest memories or strongest feelings about that time?
Yeah, the period of Saddam Hussein is the worst period in our lives, in the life of any Iraqi. I'm not political, but Saddam Hussein harmed all the Iraqi peoples. And no one excluded from this. So anybody has memories. For example, my brother, he was a prisoner of war in Iran. And many of my cousins, they killed in the war, of the first war with Iran and the Gulf War, or the second, the later war. All of these memories is bad memories about Saddam.
What was it like for a doctor, a pediatrician like yourself, working in Basra under Saddam?
Working as a doctor in the period of Saddam Hussein is, I think it is hopeless. We work there just to save the lives of the people and not more. We gain nothing as a doctor from Saddam Hussein. For example, I give you an example. The salary of each doctor in that period is about $2 to $3 per month. And this is very little amount, you know. Nowadays, the salary become better. This is one thing. Another thing is the drugs, the availability of drugs. Because, you know, because of economic sanction in that period, very little amount of drugs come to our hospitals. Not the amount, the quality of drugs that come from certain area in the world, which is very cheap and not active drugs. No other facilities. All of our instruments, they are old instruments. For example, the X-ray in my hospital, the X-ray machine, I think it is from 1960. And we use it now. Till that time, it's very old.
But surely conditions for doctors and nurses in Iraq have got worse now with the occupation, the insurgency, the number of people injured. Surely your work is much more difficult and you work in much more difficult conditions now.
Yeah, it is more difficult, of course. It is a very, very difficult job in Basra because we face many problems. There social problems, economic problems, and there is no peace to go from our homes to the hospitals. In Basra, it is less common for blooms to occur there, but it can be occurs.
So if you compare the two, life as a doctor before under Saddam and life as a doctor now, which would you choose?
I choose now, of course, because it is worse, but I choose now because Saddam is gone.
So for you, the most important thing is Saddam has gone?
Yes, of course. Of course. This is the most important thing in our life.
Is it difficult being here in Prague? Do you miss Iraq?
Yeah, I miss it strongly, especially Basra and my family. The living condition here is nice people, very kind, but something is strange for us. We accommodate gradually here, and that's all.
So how do you keep in touch with your family?
I call them by mobile, and also they call me by mobile. And this is just this way present for us to call our family. I say to you, there is no internet connection here and no TV to see the world in Iraq.
So it's difficult for you to keep up with what's happening in Iraq?
Yeah, our families call us daily, and they inform us about what happened in Iraq.
And I suppose the news that you are getting from Iraq must make you quite nervous and quite anxious about the safety of your own family and friends in Basra, as things appear anyway to be getting worse in your country.
Yeah, of course. Of course that. But nowadays, since about 10 days, the conditions in Iraq may be settled and no problems. Yeah.
What do you hope to learn from your training here in Prague's Motel Hospital? Tell me a bit more about this training course that you are involved in here.
Really, I hope to learn many things about echocardiography.
Can you explain that for our listeners, what exactly echocardiology is?
Yeah, echocardiography is to examine the heart by ultrasound instrument to see the chambers of the heart and the valves and the defect, the congenital defect, the holes in the heart. All of these we can see in echocardiography. No pediatrician in Iraq, in Basra city, learn about these things, and I hope that we can know these things and assist the children with congenital heart disease to diagnose their problems.
So your training will help you diagnose Iraqi children who have heart defects?
Yes, of course, that's what I mean.
Many people in Iraq had very high expectations when Saddam was removed. Many people were very hopeful for the future. The last few years, though, have been anything but hopeful, and the situation now does look rather bleak. Are you hopeful for the future of your country? Do you think things will get better?
I think that, but in several years, not now, it takes many years to become better. The political idea, the election rules, the what we call the parliament, all of these can save the situation there, save the economic situations and political situations, and no one become like Saddam, and we don't want another Saddam.
And the Americans, when should they leave?
I think they should leave as soon as possible. When the conditions settled in Iraq, they must leave. They must not to go one day after that.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for you.
And that's it from Radio Prague for now. Should you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at english@radio.cz or 12099 Prague 2 in the Czech Republic. For a review of our reports and features, visit our website www.radio.cz/English, where you'll find lots of other information on the Czech Republic. My name is Dita Asiedu. Until next time, take care and happy listening.